This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. This is Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Innovative thoughts from baseball's best coaching minds from around the world. Brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. Now your host, former USA Baseball National Team Coach, Peter Caliendo.
Hey, good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, wherever you're at in the U.S. or around the world. Welcome to Baseball Outside the Box. Thanks for joining us. Before we begin, special thanks to ESPN Honolulu for covering us. Welcome all from Honolulu. We really appreciate it. Also, don't forget, go to baseballoutsidethebox.com, go to the audio part and subscribe, get your updates on the new shows. Also, YouTube, Peter Caliendo, do the same thing. And tonight, we are also on Facebook Live. So if you have any questions on Facebook Live, just type them in the comments section. And folks, tonight we are going to have a great show because we're going to talk about the state of the game and some of the changes in the game, possible future changes, why we're doing all this. It's going to be interesting. And also how it can possibly hurt the development of the game or help it. That'll be a whole talk in itself. And special guest today, he's one of the best broadcasters in the game. Now, I know people are going to say, well, yeah, he's on your show, so you're going to say that. But I mean, he is one of the best. I've loved listening to him. Former Cubs broadcaster, play-by-play. He's currently the Braves broadcaster for Fox, and he is the grandson of the famous Harry Carey. But what a family. His dad, his grandfather, him, all broadcasters. What a legacy they all are going to leave in this great game of baseball. Let me welcome Chip Carey. How you doing, Chip?
I'm doing great, Peter. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, thank you. Hey, on your day off, too, out of all of them. So I got to let folks know, on your day off, you're doing my podcast. I really appreciate it, man.
Hey, I'm happy to talk baseball anytime, anywhere. So it's all good. Day off or not, it's always a treat.
Well, I'll tell you what, I love, it's interesting because, you know, as a broadcaster, I just want to ask you, as a broadcaster, and I'm not going to mention names, but in general, the guys I love to listen to are the gals, whoever's doing the broadcasting. Obviously, you love the people that are knowledgeable. You got to be knowledgeable in the game. The teams and all that. I get all that. You do your homework, but also you got to have a little sense of humor. You got to have some great slogans or great words to use, on home run calls and all that. It does take, to me, that's the person I want to listen to. I think most fans are like that. No.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's entertainment. Look, our job is to entertain and inform. As you said, the main job that we have is to provide a bridge between the fans who watch the game or want to come to the game, and the players who play the game. And that's where the information, the homework comes in. And the style with which you do that, I think, is sort of the vanilla ice cream or pistachio ice cream or strawberry ice cream that people like or don't like. But we all have our unique ways of doing the games. But the basics are basically the same. We all know the game. We love the sport. We love being around it. We love being around the people. But the ability to tell the story in real time and take a snapshot, 162 snapshots a day, or I should say 162 daily snapshots of a season, is what tells the story of a ball club over the course of a campaign. And I'm really lucky. I have great teammates, great partners, and we have a good team to follow here in Atlanta. So it makes the job really a labor of love and a lot of fun to do.
Absolutely. And the other part of this is also, your dad, your grandfather, obviously your grandfather, what an entertainer he was. I remember him when he was with Jimmy Pearsall. They were a lot of fun to listen to. Not sure they could be doing it now in these days.
No chance.
But back then, no problem. But it'd be interesting to find out a couple things you took from them. I mean, all these years, obviously you took a lot from them, but a couple things that you took from them that helped you in your career.
Unbridled honesty. I think that as you get older and do the games more and more, and you've been around longer and you've experienced life, I'm 56 years old now. When you do as many games as I have done, you kind of worry less about the reactions of telling the truth as opposed to telling the truth. I mean, look, that's what Harry was specialized in. He didn't care if Bill Melton liked him or not. He didn't care if Jimmy Pearsall liked him or not. He told the truth. That got him in a lot of trouble, but he could go to bed and look in the mirror the next day and say, I told the truth. That's difficult for a young guy to do in this day and age with Twitter and Facebook and all the social media pressures that these guys have to deal with. Look, I have two twin sons that are getting into the broadcasting business. They want to be Major League Baseball play-by-play guys. They hopefully will be fourth generations of us. doing this sport. And the challenges that they have to deal with now in the business are incomprehensible to me. I don't know how they will be able to do it. I think they'll be very successful, but it's really, really hard. And I think that's what I go back to said. At the end of the day, truth is your best defense. If a guy is hitting 220, no amount of pumping him up or lying about the video is going to help the guy change the fact that he's hitting 220. And if he's hitting 700, you're obligated to say so because that's the truth. So be honest was the number one thing. You cannot sacrifice your credibility for any player, any organization, any broadcast entity, because at the end of the day, as I said, you have to be able to look in the mirror. And, you know, secondly, it was, you know, be yourself. For me personally, look, my dad and my grandfather were on national TV cable outlets when I was starting the business. And it was really hard to find my own voice because naturally, obviously people say, well, you only got the job because of nepotism, blah, 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 blah. That isn't true. But it was hard to find my own way of doing the games that didn't sound like Harry and didn't sound like Skip, but were an expression of who I was as a person. And again, as you do it more and more, as you become more and more comfortable, the old Malcolm Gladwell 10,000 hour thing, as you do it more and more, you become more comfortable in your own skin. You can handle the slings and arrows that come your way from people who aren't going to like you no matter what you do, or not get your head too big because of the people who are going to like you no matter what you do. So be yourself, be honest, tell the truth, the pictures don't lie, and find a way to do it your way, because at the end of the day, it's up to you. Once that door opens, people can help you all you want, but you got to walk through it. And if it's not Harry or Skip Carey in my case doing the games, it's me. And I think that was really, really two wonderful pieces of advice that I passed along to my kids as well.
Well, I tell you what, that sounds like real life. Sounds like being a great manager, great coach, great person, yeah. Great father. I mean, it sounds like life in general. Your kids are very lucky, obviously, to have a father who they can, you know, get a lot of feedback from. And I think that's important because a lot of times we don't realize what we're doing on the air. And that's why I wanted to ask before we get into the state of the game. You know, I get it that you've got a lot of experience, but at the same time, you know, you got to start somewhere. And then, I mean, the announcers seem pretty good. They don't make many mistakes when it comes to the verbal aspect of the game. I mean, they may make, you know, they may say something people disagree with, obviously, and that's okay. But as far as making mistakes, the name or the, you know, the number or the announce, whatever the announcement may be, what's the preparation like just for our young people out there preparing for a game?
Well, I make mistakes all the time. There's no such thing as a perfect broadcast. I mean, Vin Scully is the Shakespeare of our industry, and I'm sure he would tell you that he's never done a perfect broadcast. I made one last night. I forgot how many outs there were because there was a million things going on. It happens. I think the key to handling that is, number one, acknowledging you messed up. And number two, being human enough to understand that, you know, people make mistakes and laugh about it and just correct it and move on. Don't dwell on it. But the preparation, for me personally, I'm up every day at 8 o'clock in the morning, if not sooner, get a cup of coffee. I'm reading all the newspapers. I'm going over all the games that took place the night before. I'm looking at our opponent, reading their newspapers, getting the press clips. Then I go to the ballpark 3.5-4 hours before the game, try to get down on the field or near the field. So maybe talk to a couple of players, certainly different now in the COVID era. And then the game in itself is kind of the final exam. You know, we don't just show up and have a pretty tie on and a nice sport coat and great looking hair. You know, we put a lot of effort and work into bringing the fans, as I said, as close to the product as we are allowed to in this era of COVID-19. And it is challenging because some of the things that we want to do as announcers, we cannot do because we're not allowed the access. Some of the things we want to do as artists, we're not allowed because of the restrictions and limitations of what the media will allow us to do. But that said, you know, we work very hard. It's an 8 o'clock till midnight job that doesn't seem like it because we're on the air for 3.5-4 hours doing a baseball game, but that's the final exam. Whether you pass the test or not is up to the audience. But I know that personally speaking, I go to work armed with all kinds of information in case the game's bad, ready to go, ready to tee up my partners. I believe that the job of a play-by-play guy on TV is to make the analyst the star of the broadcast. Hmm. That's very different than the way my grandfather did it. He wanted to be the star, but those guys played. They sat in the batter's box with a 97-mile-an-hour fastball coming under their chin. They've hit a home run. I've never done that. Fans want to hear what they experienced. And the more that we can get those experiences out of those players and draw those experiences and make them, shall we say, resonate with the fans at home who always dream about being able to do it, I think that's what makes a successful broadcast.
You know, the other, you mentioned honesty, you know, and I just put on Twitter a few times because it just happens all the time. In 39 years I've been in the game, I see something new all the time happen. I'm like, wow, I never saw that before. And you say honesty. So if a situation comes up, it may maybe even be a rule, and you're not really sure about it, how do you handle that situation on air?
I say exactly that. If I'm not sure, I say, you know what? I'm not sure, but we're going to find out. I think people recognize that we're not robots. We're not computers. We're human beings. So you can't possibly know every situation that happens in a major league game, much less any other major league game. And you're right, Peter. That's the great thing about our sport. No two games are ever alike.
Right.
As long as you're honest with your audience and let them know what you know, and more importantly, what you don't, I think they respect the fact that you're shooting straight with them. There's nothing worse than somebody who's trying to BS their way through a rule and they get it wrong. You know, we endeavor to get it right the first time, but if we don't, I, you know, my ego is small enough that I could say I was wrong. And I think people respect that. And I think that that's a really good path for anybody that wants to do this business. Admit when you're wrong. And if you don't know, there's nothing wrong with saying, I don't know. As long as you say, I don't know, but I'm going to find out. And as soon as I do, I'll let the audience know.
Now, this might be a little strange, but, you know, sometimes it's baseball outside the box here. And there are times, you know, I may not even know what I'm talking about, but it's nice to talk about it. You have opinion and you have actually what happens in the game. How do you balance the two? Are you supposed to give more opinion? Does somebody tell you to give more? How does that work?
No, I've not been given direction about that. Luckily, I have two partners in Tom Glavine and Jeff Francoeur who have very strong opinions about a lot of different things. In many regards, I agree with their opinions. In those instances where I don't, I say, okay, let's play devil's advocate. I'll present another side of an argument, and it leads to a very interesting and hopefully intellectual conversation. Look, I think we live in a world where everything is black and white. And if someone doesn't agree with my opinion, they're automatically a bad person and vice versa. That's not the way it's supposed to work in life. We're supposed to talk to each other, listen to each other, and maybe learn a thing or two and understand why they come from the position that they come from. That's what I think is really unique about our broadcast is that Tom Glavine is in the Hall of Fame. He has very strong opinions about how he thinks the game should be played and what's right and what's wrong with it. Jeff Francoeur is still a contemporary of many of the guys that are playing now. And he too has very strong opinions about what he thinks is right and what he thinks is wrong. Who am I to say that they're wrong? I didn't play. But I will approach it from the fan's perspective and say, well, what about option A? Or what about this idea B? Or what about this philosophy C? And again, it makes them think, I think, and it thinks their opinions certainly make me think. And hopefully it makes the audience think. That's the beauty of it. There's baseball is not a black and white sport. Steve Stone taught me that a long time ago. Baseball is not black and white. It's a zillion different shades of gray. And those who can sort of highlight those and illuminate those different shades of gray during a broadcast on radio or TV or in the newspaper generate people thinking about and talking about our game, which in the long run is great for all of us.
I realize you're a play-by-play, but when you talk about a color guy, and then we'll get into the we'll get right into the state of the game. When you talk about a color commentator and talks about the game, what do you think fans are looking for? They want to know the intricacies of, you know, that particular play, how that player did it, you know, maybe some background on it, or, you know, what do you think they're more interested in more than anything?
Well, I can't speak for the average fan. I can speak for me as a broadcaster who is a fan. I want to know what it's like to stand in the batter's box when Aroldis Chapman's throwing 102 miles an hour in the fog and you've got to get a hit to win the game. I want to know what it's like when it's the seventh inning or the ninth inning of a close game and you have to make a catch and throw to the plate. I want to know what you are thinking in a certain situation. My philosophy is really simple, Peter, as a broadcaster trying to get the most out of his analyst. Take me where I have never been and take me where I can't go, right? Because all of us are guilty of saying, how could he have not made that play? Or how could he have not swung at that? Well, we've never stood in that batter's box. So when that happens, it's fun talking to Jeff Francoeur, for example, who had a terrific career. Jeff, what is Acuna looking to do on this pitch, right? I mean, I can theorize about it, but I've never been there. Or yeah. Austin Riley's got one homer. What kinds of things is he working on in the cage to get ready to come out and break out of this slump? Or Tom Glavine, Sean Newcomb, when he throws strike one, has a 1.2 ERA. When he throws ball one, he's got a 6-point ERA. Why is it so hard for him to throw strike one, for example? Those are the kinds of insights that I think take us into areas where it's beyond the stats. It's beyond just esoterically looking at a game on its face and taking us a little deeper into what the players think and what they're going through. Because at the end of the day, they're human beings with the same foibles and same worries that we all have. But being asked to perform at a very, very high level under a very, very, shall we say, bright microscope. And those guys have done it. I think anytime we can get them to open up about what their experiences were and compare them to what's going on in the game now, I think the audience really enjoys that.
Hey, folks, we're with Chip Carey. I see a lot of people on Facebook. If you got a question, type it in the comments section. Does it help to do radio first? Because, you know, the fans don't see anything, and then become whether a color commentator or play-by-play man?
I think so. I think it's really two different worlds. And people think, well, how can you say that? It really is true. I'll give you an example. On TV, a ground ball to second base would be like, here's Luis Guillorme, 2-1 pitch, ground ball to second, two outs. That's a TV call because you have the picture. On radio, Guillorme, left-hand hitter, digs in. Trevor Williams into his windup to pitch. It's a slider, swinging a ground ball on three hops to second. Ozzie Albies to his left, scoops and fires and throws to first, and he got Guillorme by a step, two outs. You can see all those minute little details that add to the radio call. There's a certain amount of romance to radio that all of us who work in TV love. We understand why TV is so popular. It's more immediate. You have the pictures on and the like. But those of us who've done both always love radio. It's a lot of fun. You don't have the graphics. You don't have the sponsorship things that get in the way that pay the bills, by the way, on television. But yeah, anytime you can do radio, it teaches you how to think on your feet. It teaches you to be descriptive. It teaches you to see and appreciate the nuances of the game, which I think in many ways are taken away by the video, which adds a lot. Don't misunderstand me. But from an artistic standpoint, you as the guy, the practitioner of the art, do not get a chance to utilize the language and utilize the skills of the art by painting that picture like you do on television.
All right, last one on this. Voice, because you got a pretty good voice. I mean, your voice is really good for radio, television, doesn't matter what it is for. What happens if a young person doesn't have that voice? Is that something is trainable that they can, get into to make it better, make it sound better?
Well, like I said, Peter, there are people that are blessed with skill sets and people that are blessed with genetics and whatever. I'm lucky that I got what I got. I really believe firmly that, if you're talented, you'll get a chance. I mean, there are people that do baseball, that do professional sports, that don't have great voices, but they are great talents. And they're hardworking and they are passionate about it and follow that passion. You don't have to sound like John Facenda to be a Major League Baseball broadcaster. You don't. You just have to know the game. You have to have a passion for the game. You have to work your butt off. And you have to know that there are thousands of people who want the same job that you want. And so the question is, what are you willing to endure to get your chance? And I think all too often, so many people in our world now look at excuses and look at things and say, well, I can't possibly do this because of I don't have ABCD. Instead of saying, wait a minute, I'm going to work harder than that person. And even though I may not have skill set ABCD, I'm going to will my way to getting what I want. And the people that do that are the people that make it into business, I think.
All right, folks. So for you young people, great advice. Hopefully that helps. I wanted to get that out because I think there's a lot of young people looking for some advice out there and that hopefully that'll help them. All right, now you've been in the game a long time, so you've seen a lot of different things. I have a slight concern about the game, where it's heading. And my concern is this. Basically, we're trying to make some rule changes, and good that we're testing it. I get that part. But we've made some rule changes, then we're trying to make even more rule changes in the future. And I feel it's going to take away from the development of players. An example could be you're trying to make the base bigger, because you want more steals. You're trying to tell pitchers they're going to have to step off so you get more stealing. on my side is, well, why aren't we teaching how to steal more? So on your end, what you've seen so far, the state of the game, where it's at, what do you like and what do you dislike so far?
Well, look, it's still the greatest game ever invented. I think we're dealing with the, you know, shall we say, to quote the former President Bush, you know, the bigotry of low expectations. Just because the game is different doesn't make it better or worse. It's still baseball. Why are we stopping teaching baseball? I think that's my biggest problem. Look, I'm very concerned, like you are, Peter, with the lack of development that last year is going to cost young players in the major leagues. I'm very concerned with the elimination of so many scouts, the guys that won't get discovered. I'm very worried about the over-reliance on analytics that's taking place throughout the game. And I'm very worried about the fact that kids are still choosing other sports besides baseball. And it's a shame. You know, I don't know how to fix it other than to say we've got to get back to teaching the game, the art of baseball. I understand the rule changes, and I'm all for them. I'm all for trying them out. I'm all for the Petri dish. Let's see what works and what doesn't. A lot of them did work. I hate the DH, but I loved it for what it did for our team last year. And I can understand why we probably should have it. Not a big fan of the extra inning runner at second rule right away. You know, let's play an inning or two and figure it out. Love the 7-inning doubleheader rule. But, you know, we don't have enough scouts. We don't have enough boots on the ground. And I really believe that we are teaching kids to, for example, from the standpoint of pitching, we're teaching guys to throw as hard as they can for as long as they can. We're sacrificing command for velocity. And then we're wondering why guys, A, blow out, or B, can't throw enough strikes to be effective starting pitchers. And they're always looking over their shoulder because of the arbitrary pitch counts that take place in the game. You know, Greg Maddux said, there were games where I could throw 140 pitches and I wasn't exhausted. There were games where I threw 65 pitches and I was done. The one size fits none approach to so many things that are happening in the game, I think is extremely troublesome and something that we've got to take a long, hard look at.
What's your advice? Because you brought that up about the man on second. You think it should be maybe in the 11th inning and why?
I don't know. I mean, I understand why they're doing it because of COVID. I've got to plug in my phone. They're doing that because of COVID. They wanted to keep guys off the field, and that's cool. That's fine. But you know what? I'd like to see, you know, play another inning, play maybe two innings and then go to it. Mm-hmm. I love Jason Stark's idea. Let's put the top three hitters. Once you get past two innings, put 1, 2, 3 up there against the bullpens and see who wins. Let's try something fun. Tom Glavine said, let's make it like an NHL shootout. You get to pick the three hitters you want to come up in the extra innings and see what goes on. If we're going to make a carnival of it, let's go ahead and really make it a carnival and make it interesting and exciting so that you can talk about the strategy that's involved as opposed to just where you happen to be in the lineup. But again, as I said, I understand why. They don't want 15-inning games. They don't want guys sitting in the clubhouse or the dugout for all those innings with COVID running around and all that. But I think like anything else, we can tweak some things and try some things and maybe make them better than they are now. And they're not bad, but maybe we can make it better because baseball, like everything else in life, doesn't survive in a vacuum.
Yeah, and I agree. I mean, you got to look at making some changes. The game has always changed in some ways. I mean, they changed in the old days several times, you know, so there's always been changes. Nothing wrong with change. You know, interesting because when I was dealing internationally, still am, we implemented the man on second in the Olympics. And we actually let the teams pick who would come up to hit, exactly what you mentioned. But then we reverted back because it got a little bit too complicated when it came internationally because of the lineup changes, the names.
Right. And I get that. And I get that. Look, you know, as long as I'm all for trying things. I have no problem with trying it. But let's be honest with ourselves and figure out what works and what doesn't work. And if we can do that, it's kind of the old saying in life. It's really important to know what you are. It's maybe more important to know what you're not. I think it's important for baseball to do the same thing. Let's really examine what works and take a hard look and admit what doesn't. And then we're being honest with our audience, being honest with our players and promoting a culture where we're all just trying to make it better. And however we do that at the end of the day, that's best for all of us because everybody prospers, everybody makes money and the fans enjoy the game because ultimately our job is to serve them, not ourselves.
Yeah, and one of the concerns I know MLB has, and that's the action of the game, because, you know, as you know, yeah. I just read a stat the other day, 37% of the time the infield and outfielders aren't doing it. They don't make any outs. It's all the pitcher and the catcher, which, you know, again, you mentioned young kids. You want to keep young kids interested in the game. They want to watch the game. But if the game is boring and there's not a lot of action, what's your advice with the action part? What can they do differently on that part?
I think this goes all the way back to development, and it goes back to even high schools. You know, we're talking about, we're teaching kids to throw as hard as you can, as long as you can. We're not teaching the art of pitching. I really believe that. You know, we can talk about doctoring the baseball. We can talk about moving the mound back. We can talk about eliminating the shifts, all that stuff. We can talk about all the analytical information in the game. The bottom line is we're not teaching kids to play baseball. And at the end of the day, what is the most exciting thing about our sport? What's the most important thing? What do they say? What have they said for 100 years? Be strong up the middle, right?
Yeah.
What are we taking away from the art of baseball? When's the last time you saw a takeout slide second base? When's the last time you saw a collision at the plate? And I'm not advocating anybody getting hurt, but what I'm saying is all the things that made baseball fun, the cat and mouse game between a pitcher, a batter, a catcher, and a base stealer, all that's disappearing from the game because we have created a sport where it's all about velocity. It's all about launch angle. It's not about giving what the defense takes you, putting together big innings, and it's all about numbers. It's not about actually playing the game. And we see that at the major league level. We had, you know, you said it right. You said it just a moment ago, 37% of the time, the ball's not in play. That's too much. That's too much. Sandy Koufax didn't want to strike people out. He wanted guys to put the ball in play. He wanted him to hit the ball because if I can get an out on one or two pitches, that's better than three or four where I get a strikeout. And I think all of that has disappeared in that Tom Glavin, Greg Maddux would probably have trouble getting drafted today because number one, they got outs, but number two, they didn't throw hard enough. And I think we're forgetting the forest for the trees. The job of a pitcher is to get outs, however he gets them. But if you don't throw 93 or 94 miles an hour, you don't get looked at nowadays. And that's unfortunate. And I think in many ways is driving kids away from the game.
Yeah, you know what, Chip, with COVID, I've been watching a lot of ball games. It's my impression, I'd like to get your opinion. It's my impression that some things are starting to change. I'm starting to see a little bit more bunting, a little bit more stealing. You know, what have you seen in all the games you've been watching?
I'm not questioning your observation. I have not seen a ton of that. Look, I grew up in St. Louis, and I grew up with Vince Coleman and Willie McGee and Tommy Herr and Jack Clark. I mean, leadoff walk, steal second, ground ball to second, Jack Clark sack fly, 1-0, right? Or Coleman steals two bases, then steals home or comes home on a pass ball. That's such an exciting part of the game, and I loved it. And it created such drama and such tension and put pressure on the pitchers. I think that, yes, we have got to get back to playing baseball. Home run derby is not exciting for today's fan. The three outcome game, which is so prevalent in our sport, it's going the way of the dodo, I hope. And it's funny to me that in a sport where we say strikeouts don't matter from an offensive standpoint, yet we value strikeout pitchers above all else.
Right.
It's just it, right. I mean, right. The utter rank hypocrisy of that is just astounding to me. And if at the end of the day, a guy can throw 97 and maybe walk five guys, or he can throw 95 and spot his fastball and put it exactly where he wants to and dominate for seven or eight innings, I think that's really important. I mean, think about it, Peter. When's the last time that you sat back and said, wow, a 10 strikeout game was special?
Yeah.
It doesn't happen anymore. No. I mean, I was born in the 60s, grew up watching the Cardinals in the 70s. You know, when Bob Gibson was strikeout 10, or he would match up with Tom Seaver, and it's a 2-1 game, and they're both just pounding the strike zone in 2 hours and 20 minutes, by the way. That was a really special event. Now, every team strikes out 10, 11, 12 times per game. And so the strikeout from a pitching standpoint is not nearly as impressive as it used to be. And from an offensive standpoint, it's not the embarrassment that it used to be. There's no premium placed on putting the ball in play anymore, which goes to your original question. How do we get the game more exciting? We got to find a way to put the ball in play more. And moving the mound back isn't the answer. Teaching kids how to handle the bat is the answer. And if that's not going to happen because we're going to just try to hit home runs with every swing of the bat, well, then the game's going to be the three-out can game that most of us kind of are forced to watch in a 3.5-hour, 4-hour manner every single night over 162 days.
Yeah, and I got to tell you, I was watching a Cub game yesterday. You know, and the Cubs were struggling, you know, at the beginning of the season. Last couple games, they picked it up a little bit. What we've seen the last game, I mean, 16 runs, one home run, which was a grand slam, a lot of base hits up the middle, a lot of balls in play, and especially in the cold weather, a lot of balls in play, a lot of errors. Right. Because I'm sure the weather has a little bit, because I played in the cold, and it was not fun to play in the cold. But, you know, you kind of play what baseball gives you, that game's going to give you. If you, you know, if it's cold and you're putting the ball in play a lot, you probably got a good chance of getting on base and some mistakes.
Of course. Exactly right. And, you know, the old saying in baseball, put the ball in play, something good might happen.
Yeah.
Nothing good happens if the ball ends up in the catcher's glove and he throws it to the third baseman. So, you know, look, I say this with a great deal of humility because I never pitched in the major leagues. I never swung the bat in the major leagues. And it's a miracle that anybody ever gets a hit. So I want to be clear about that. I'm not knocking today's players in any way, shape, or form. The game has evolved into what we're seeing now. And we are seeing stars like Soto and Acuna and Trout and so many others that are just doing unbelievable things at the age they're doing it. What I'm saying is, as a fan, the preference I have is hit and runs, straight steals, putting the ball in play, 2.5 hour games, get in the box, stay in the box. Pitchers have the sign, throw your fastball, establish that and see if they can hit it. The old saying, look, if you throw the ball 100 times, they're going to put it in play or get a hit 28% of the time. Seems to me a percentage play that if you throw strikes, you're going to win more often than not. Too many guys throw 95, 96, 97 miles an hour and don't know where their fastball is going. And it's astounding to me. You know, velocity over command is the dearth of our game. Launch angle at the expense of taking advantage of what the defense gives you is the dearth of the game from an audience standpoint. And, you know, when baseball is played beautifully, like we've talked about, there's nothing more exciting than watching that. And there's nothing more boring than watching a walk, strikeout, and homer fest, which we see an awful lot.
Absolutely. You know, and folks, I was just seeing another stat out there. And, if you, you know, major league pitchers are pretty good, obviously, but think about it. 24% of the time, they only hit their spot when it comes to games. So if they're throwing a fastball inside, only 24% of the time they're hitting that spot. So, and I mentioned that because, you know, we're saying, okay, let's change this shift stuff. And I'm not in favor of change. I think you should be able to play anywhere you want. And you got to be able to hit the ball the other way. And one of the areas are pitchers are going to make mistakes. What I'm seeing in batting practice a little bit, because they show it on television, is I am seeing a few hitters hitting the ball where it's pitched. I think we forgot that part, right? Instead of hitting it where we always want to, what about where the ball's pitched? If we teach that to young kids early, they're just going to develop like they were in the older days. That's what we did in the old days.
I read an article today in Sports Illustrated from a nationally known baseball writer that said that the reason Jay Bruce's career ended too soon was because of the shift. I cannot disagree with that statement more than just about anything. The reason Jay Bruce's career may have ended too soon was he was a dead pull hitter. Use all fields. I'm not saying it's easy to do, but if we don't teach players how to do that, how are they going to do it at this level with the caliber of pitching that they're facing? Freddie Freeman's a perfect example. It's mind-boggling to me. Here's a guy whose natural stroke is to hit the ball on a line over the shortstop's head, and yet they play him as a dead pull hitter on the infield. He picks up 20, 30 hits a year by spoiling that shift. And so if you want the shift to disappear, hit the ball the other way once or twice. And then at least they have to think about it. It's frustrating beyond belief. You know, Kevin Kernan, New York Post writer, now writes for ball9.com, talked about the Angels game the other day. The Rangers, Joey Gallo, in a two-run game, lays down a bunt, led to a run. The pitcher melted down. He couldn't believe, what are you doing bunting? Like, it was almost an offense against humanity that he laid down a bunt against the shift.
Yeah.
If more players did that and played baseball instead of analytics ball and launch angle ball, we would see the game revert back to the game we grew up watching. And I think that would solve a lot of these problems. I'm not a big fan of all the shifters playing in the outfield. I'm with you. You should be able to play your defense where you want it to play. And if a hitter's frustrated because he hits the ball that way, well, then hit it the other way. I would personally like to see all the infielders have to play in the infield. You can play them wherever you want, but they can't play in the outfield grass. I think that would help get the ball in play a little more, because when a guy barrels the ball like Freddie Freeman does and he hits it into the shift, that's frustrating and that's unfortunate. But we'll see if that works in the Atlantic League. I think that's one of the rules they're talking about. We'll see if it makes its way to the major leagues.
You know, that's a good point. I mean, I can see that. Keep the infielders in the infield. They can play anywhere they want. Just keep them in the
keep them on the dirt.
Yeah, I like that idea. You know, and folks, just so you know, I mean, we've had Reggie Smith on the, I think, one of the best hitting instructors I've been around on the show many times. And he talked about the same thing. You know, you got to hit it the other way and you got to train to hit the other way. He did it. A lot of other players did it. There's no reason why you can't do it. You know, I know this could be a hot topic, the instant replay, because remember, we were talking about MLB's talking about the pace of play. We want that pace of play to continue. That's why you want the pitcher to get the ball, get ready and go. You want the hitter to step in there. There are times hitters are going to step out. They have to, because mentally, you know, maybe they swung at two bad pitches. They want to step out and just forget it and then come back in. But it happens all the time. And if you're talking about pace of play, something that I was in favor of, the instant replay, because I just wanted to get the calls right, because they're so hard to make and the umpires are so good, but they're human. But at the same time, when you're talking about pace of play, that's also slow down the game.
Yeah, I think replay has been perverted. I don't think the replay system is being used the way it's intended. When you have a two-out ground ball to second on a bang-bang play to first with the eighth-place hitter coming up and we are pausing the game to go look at that replay, that's not what it was supposed to do. If you remember when replay started, it was for boundary calls, home run calls, and then it became plays at the plate. That's where I would use it. I'm over the managers holding their hand up saying, wait, we have to look to get confirmation from our video room. And then the umpires are standing there waiting. And then they make the 30-second walk to the headsets. Then we wait for New York to make the decision. Enough. I don't think it's a good system. I understand the philosophy. We want to get all the calls right, but we don't get all the calls right. That's the beauty of the game. Umpires miss 6, 7, 8 pitches per game behind the plate because of the point you made. It's a human game played by human beings. And is it better to make sure we get the game antiseptically right? Or is it better that we have people talking about the game a la Don Dengenger? I grew up in St. Louis, you know, the World Series with the Royals and the Cardinals, right? Is replay worth that? I don't know the answer to that question. You know, I wish we had better communication from New York. A, what is the call that is being, you know, what's the rule basis being used to determine the call? Number two, what replay angle are they using? Show us that. And then number three, have someone communicating with the broadcasters and the fans in the stands via the jumbo board once the decision is made, why the decision was made and what the determining factor was in the call. There isn't enough transparency, in my opinion, to allow the announcers to instruct the audiences what's going on. Or when you see like the Phillies and Braves the other day, when everybody in the ballpark sees that Alec Boehm doesn't touch the plate, yet there's not enough evidence to overturn the call. I mean, it makes no sense to me. I get the point. I know what they're trying to do, but I would rather see replay used in the playoffs only. Play the regular season games, deal with the human error. Life is all about bad breaks. It happens, and deal with it, move on. And if you got to make sure that the plays are right in the playoffs, let's do it then. And let's use replay as a training ground in regular season play. Rather than use it for every single game, because you're right, it does slow the flow of the game. As good as the umpires are, and they are good, so many calls are inconclusive that what's the point? I mean, you know, it doesn't seem like we're really solving anything other than making one side really, really angry and frustrated with a replay system that, at least on its face when you see it at the scoreboard, doesn't get it right most of the time anyway.
No, I like the playoff part in the World Series because that's where it really counts.
Right.
That's really where you don't want the mistakes, because I mean, that's everything on the line there. And the guys are trying to win it all. I can see that part. You know, my main concern is also, because I'm starting to see it as I'm watching the games, there's plays out there that are happening a la the check swing that are not reviewable.
You just pointed out a perfect example of the hypocrisy. If the goal is to get all the plays right, then why aren't all plays reviewable?
Right.
So if we're saying that some plays are more important than others, okay, that's fine. Then let's make sure that we review only the important plays. Well, in a course of a 9-inning game, how do we know what play is more important than another? We've seen one pitch changed the course of the game, held Dave Roberts' stolen base, changed the whole course of a series, and led to the Red Sox winning a ring. Once you go down that rabbit hole, you really, really are, shall we say, in trouble. So either get rid of it and use it on scoring plays only, or we got to go and review everything. Check swings of the plate, hit batsmen, all the stuff that's non-reviewable now, and take it out of the hands of the umpires, which I think personally would be a great shame, because I agree with you. The guys that umpire these games are incredibly talented people. And I like the fact that there is, if not argument, discussion about what a guy's strike zone is. Remember in the old days, before replay, pitchers had to scout what the umpire's strike zone was.
Absolutely.
And they'd go to the mound and they'd say, okay, Dutch Reinhardt's got an east-west strike zone. I can go another inch or two off the plate. And the hitters knew that too. And so much of this is being taken away by technology and the review process that it takes away a lot of the joy of the game, in my opinion.
Yeah, Chip, I brought up the check swing on part for about 10 years. And one of the toughest calls is the check swing for the home plate umpire. I'm trying, especially at the major league level, these guys are throwing 100 miles an hour. I got to worry about the pitch, the movement, the location. You know, there may be throw ball inside. I'm set up inside and then it goes outside. And then I got to watch the batter, you know, his check swing. I mean, that's almost humanly impossible. And that's my point. Somebody should be making that call other than the home plate umpire.
Well, that's why they appeal. And, you know, look, again, I used the Phillies game with Alec Bohm scoring at the plate, or he still hasn't touched the plate. But I don't blame Lance Barrett, the home plate umpire. There's a lot going on there.
Yeah.
The purpose of replay was to help him make the proper call. And maybe the way to do it, if we're going to have replay this way, is New York doesn't know what the call is. They make the call.
Yeah.
They make the call. They have the right to overrule whatever the call is. And all the umpire has to do is wave off and go run scores or he's out. And then they come on the board and explain why. You know, the NFL does it pretty well. You know, they have a rules official available to talk about the arcane things that happen during the course of the game. Some of it is opinion based, but most of it's rule based. And they help the fans understand why the call is being made the way that it's being made, instead of what baseball has, which, again, I'm not knocking baseball. I'm trying to say, this is a way to improve it, is let people know what the thought process is and explain to us the logic behind the decision so that we can have an insight as to how it works. Who is the replay official? You know, there's a conspiracy theory. Well, the umpires in New York don't want to harm the grades of their guys behind the plate. I think these guys have way too much integrity to do that. I think everybody wants to get it right. Getting it right is one thing. Let's make it better so we know we're getting it right instead of thinking we got it right. Those are two very different conversations, I think.
And there's not a better example than the Acuna play, I believe, at home plate. No, is that not Acuna? Who's
Alec
the guy?
Bohm.
Oh, sorry, Alec.
Yeah.
You know, we saw, obviously, everything we saw, it was different than what the replay guy saw, but we never saw what the replay guys actually were looking at.
Right, right. And so I was told that the replay people have the exact same camera angles that TV provides them. They don't have special angles. They don't have special cameras, all that stuff, which begs the question, why not?
Yeah.
Baseball is an $11 billion industry. You go to the Korean Baseball League, they have cameras that have 4D technology that can pivot on an axis, and you can see from a different angle without moving the camera exactly what happens. If baseball is going to go down the rabbit hole of replay, and they've already done that, okay, I'm on board, but let's do it the right way. Let's get the best technology. Let's make sure we have cameras wherever we need to have them to give the umpires and the replay officials every possible tool. Insist that they get it right, that they have the tools to make sure they can get it right, because I'm not convinced that that's the case. I understand every ballpark's different. I understand the limitations that you have with some technologies, but if we're going to do it, let's do this right. Let's get the high def cameras. Let's get the technology. Let's get the 4Ds that pivot. Let's put cameras on the fences so we don't see fan interference. Let's put cameras on foul poles for fair foul calls. We can do this. And if we do that, it shouldn't be as difficult or as onerous as it seems to be in getting the calls right, so the fans at home don't get frustrated and throw stuff on the field like we saw the other night.
Yeah, and folks, this is why I love these type of discussions, because, you know, we don't know it all, but the more questions you ask, the more opinions you listen to, the more things you can learn and make some changes that will help the game. I think everybody's intention is good, but I think we need to make sure that, you know, we listen to more people. And I say that because I put a lot of things on social media because I'll ask questions. What do people think? And I learned some things just by putting those questions up.
Sure.
One of them is going to be, I'm very open-minded and I listen to everybody. And I was in favor of this, but now I'm kind of wishy-washy about it. And it's coming because they're testing it. And you know where I'm going at. And that's the electronic strike zone. Why am I in favor? Same reason why I was in favor of instant replay, because I just want to see the call right. But I would love to hear your opinion on this one.
Not a fan of it. I love the human element of the game. I ascribe it to, like I said, with instant replay. I understand the philosophy behind it because there's so much involved. And, you know, look, one game might determine whether a team goes to the playoffs or not. And one, like the Braves, if they finish a game behind the Phillies, they're going to look back to that game in Atlanta against the Phillies with Alec Bohm, was called safe when he was out, as a critical game in their season. Look, I get it. But I also ascribe it to what's more fun. And with all apologies to maybe one of your sponsors, if someone drives a Lexus, it's a beautiful car. You don't hear a sound outside. You don't hear the engine. You are riding on a cloud. You are in the lap of luxury and you're cruising down Lakeshore Avenue in Chicago, right? Beautiful car. Is that fun compared to driving a 67 Camaro with the top down and the smell of exhaust when you floor it going down Lakeshore Avenue toward Michigan Avenue?
Yeah.
No. I mean, in my opinion, no. Right. I prefer the 67 Camaro, and I prefer the human element. I want to know what Hunter Wendell said strike zone is like. I want to see if our pitcher can exploit that. I want to see how the catcher works with that. I want to see how the hitter adjusts to it. Because at the end of the day, again, it's a human game played by really tough human beings. And the minute we take the human element out of it is, you know, this isn't a video game. I don't want to watch it. If I want a video game, I'll go put the Xbox on. I want to watch human beings show their talents. And as soon as we take those talents away from the umpires, I think is the day that our game becomes a lot less attractive than it already is.
Man, I'll tell you what, I agree with you 100%. I'll tell you why, because, you know, here we are now. If we got an electronic strike zone, we just need a catcher that catches. You know, there's no skill. There's no coaches teaching any skills. We don't have that umpire relationship or knowing what the umpire calls. I mean, there's so many parts of the game that we're going to take away. I agree with you. Listen, you've been great. I want to ask you this last thing, and then we'll let you go. Again, another change, because with young players, there's a lot of excitement. There's celebration. We've seen it, whether it's Tatis or whether it's, another player that's celebrating. What's your recommendation? Because the celebration can go too far. And I'll tell you one reason. I saw a pitcher throw their cap up in the air after, you know, they did something well. Where is it going to stop? Do we need to balance it, or we just let them go?
I don't really know the answer to that. Look, the staid way that guys in our generation grew up watching the game where you don't show up your opponent. I think showing up the opponent is a misnomer. I think we need to celebrate the joy with which a Ronald Acuna Jr. or a Juan Soto or a Pete Alonso or a Francisco Lindor or a Mike Trout play the game. Look, it's a different era. These guys are from a different part of the world. They play the game differently than we do. Right. And to expect them to temper that enthusiasm and that innate joie de vivre of how they play the game in their home country just because they're playing in America, I don't think is right. At the end of the day, we're trying to celebrate our game. And let's face it, we are in the economic fight for our lives. There are so many more entertainment options available to people: baseball, basketball, football, hockey, YouTube, the internet. We need people turned on to our game. And if Ronald Acuna Jr. yells into his dugout and throws the bat 20 feet in the air because he's hit a big home run, why wouldn't we celebrate that?
Right.
Are we supposed to celebrate our successes and our wonderful moments? Absolutely. And if Garrett Cole or Trevor Bauer or Kyle Hendricks strikes out Ronald Acuna Jr. in a big point in the game, he has every right to yell and be pumped up. Hell, that's what 30,000 people in the stands are doing. That's what the broadcasters are doing. To ask these guys to temper that and put a lid on it just because that's not the way it was done. Look, Peter, that's gone the way of the dodo, man. And, if somebody gets their feelings hurt about it, it's really simple. don't let him hit the ball out of the ballpark, or don't let him strike you out. And if you want good results and you don't want to be posterized like they do in the NBA, don't be the guy that's on the poster. It's pretty simple.
I'll tell you what, this has been fantastic, folks. I know I got a lot out of this, man. This is, you know, and I was thinking about the young kids, because my concern is a lot of young kids are watching things on television, you know, and you mentioned it earlier, you know, the launch angle, or trying to throw as hard as you can. And we got young coaches teaching this stuff, and, you know, then kids aren't as successful. I mean, and I, you know, I'm concerned that not only are they going to lose television audience, but they're going to lose young kids in playing the game. They're going to
I have a 12-year-old. I have a 12-year-old kid at home, and he's playing Little League Baseball, and he's starting to pitch a little bit. And he said, I want to strike everybody out. I said, son, throw the ball over the plate. Let him hit it. You can't control the ball once it's hit. If your fielders don't make a play, it's not like you're going to, you know, you're not going to get thrown out of fifth grade because you didn't strike out the side. Involve your teammates. And that's the problem. When kids go to play Little League Baseball nowadays, they're saying it's boring because, A, nobody can hit. Nobody can hit the ball to them. No one can throw the ball. And the pitchers don't throw strikes. And so a really good Little League game is one where you see lots of action because it's fun. They don't care about winning or losing at this stage. They want to get better. And the only way they're going to get better is in real-time, real-life experience. Let them hit the ball. Throw the ball over the plate. Swing the bat. You may make an out. Who cares? But swing the bat. Feel the contact and understand what's going on. As they get older, when these coaches teach, throw high 94-mile-an-hour fastballs and they'll swing at it. Well, at this level, the major leagues, they don't. And then the pitchers are surprised when they don't get strikeouts because their stuff is good, but they can't command it. It's all about teaching the game. And that's going back to the original question you asked me. It's the greatest game in the world. We've got to get back as an industry to playing baseball. It's not home run derby. It's not Strat-O-Matic baseball. It is the game of baseball where great athletes are on display. And the best way to display those talents is to showcase and highlight the great achievements. And when a guy walks seven guys in a game, you call him out, because 30 years ago, that guy wouldn't have been in the big leagues anyway. And when a guy strikes out four guys and throws seven, eight innings and pitches a great game, point it out. That's what should be on SportsCenter, not just all the home runs and all that launch angle stuff. Valuable as it may be, that's not the essence of baseball, and I hope we find it and get back to it, because when we do, it's going to really take off.
You know, and I apologize, but I was just thinking, because, you know, earlier I said I'm seeing some changes in the game. You know, that's maybe certain games, you know, like I was watching the Kansas City game the other day, you know, and they got a man on second, nobody out. They bunt him over to third, then they squeeze. You know, I mean, you know, I love watching that. And I think offense.
It's baseball. Yeah. It's baseball. Look, like I said before, if you have young fans watching the game, watching this podcast tonight and watching a major league game now, go back and look at the Kansas City Royals and the Yankees in the playoffs and look at, I think it was Amos Otis or Hal McRae's takeout slide of Willie Randolph at second base. Look at that play. Look at some of the takeout slides that took place. And again, I am no way, shape, or form advocating dirty play. That's how baseball was played. Look at Mike Socha or Steve Yeager getting run over at the plate. Look at those plays and compare that to what we're seeing now. Again, I'm not advocating dirty play. I'm not advocating anybody getting hurt. But baseball, as Steve Stone taught me, is a tough game played by tough men. If you want to increase attention in the game and increase people's love of the game, watch the ballet on a double play where a guy comes in and doesn't know how the second baseman is going to react. Does he use the bag as a shield? Does he step back? Does he step across the infield? Does he throw right at the bill of his cap? All of those things are lost arts in the game, because if there's any contact over there, the infielders are almost shocked that, oh my God, you can't come near me. I'm wrapped in bubble wrap. That's not baseball. Hitting home runs all the time, not baseball. Putting the ball in play is baseball. Running the bases, going first to third, that's baseball. Hitting the cutoff man, that's baseball. Not needing cheat sheets to look in your cap and know how to defend a guy. that's baseball. And I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I'm just saying that, you know, maybe us old guys have to evolve and stuff, but it just seems to me that there's so much analysis and so much paralysis by analysis that the art of the game is being lost in our quest to make it perfect. I don't want perfect. I want baseball.
Yeah, and if that goes down to the younger kids, then what the problem we have is we're not going to have kids that have instincts that can play the game. I agree with you.
Totally.
Chip, you've been awesome, man. This has been great. This not only do coaches need to listen to this, Major League Baseball needs to listen to this, because I think there were a lot of great points that they can learn from. Leave you with this. If you had to make one change in the game, because, you know, change is inevitable sometimes, what would you like to see the game change?
I would like to see economic and geographic alignment, number one. And number two, I'd like to see an NBA-type TV schedule or an NBA-type schedule for the games. And by that, I mean this. I think baseball has done a wonderful job marketing its players in many ways. But one way that baseball has absolutely dropped the ball on marketing their players is this. Mike Trout, I think we'd all agree, is probably the best player in the game. Would you think that's a fair statement?
Absolutely.
Mike Trout has played a grand total of 3 games in 6 years in the city of Atlanta.
Wow.
Because of the way we do interleague. It could be done very easily where you play more interleague games, fewer interdivisional games, and you see Mike Trout once a year. 1 year he comes to Atlanta, the next year you go to Anaheim and play the Angels there. Our fans deserve to see Mike Trout. The fans in Seattle deserve to see Ronald Acuna Jr. on their TV set. We have to do a better job of marketing our game stars and getting them into the other cities and other ballparks rather than just on the highlight shows. And until we do that, number one, from a marketing standpoint, I think our sport is going to lag behind. And until we come to grips with the reality that the essence of the leagues, in my opinion, the National American Leagues, that's going to go the way of the dodo once we have the DH next year. We need to realign geographically for better travel, and we need to realign economically. It makes no sense to me that Tampa Bay, as good as they've been, plays in the same division as the Yankees, for example. If we have 8 four-team divisions and two of the divisions are with four lower socioeconomic teams, you get two of those teams in the playoffs every year. The small market teams feel like they have a chance. And I hope that baseball will somehow, some way, find a way to do that, because I think it is for the greater good that we get more people, more teams involved in postseason play besides the Dodgers every year. And that's not a knock on them for what they've done. But marketing the players to get them in the stadiums and on the TV sets every year, not every 6 years. And economic and geographic realignment, I think, would be big hits for our game. Because, again, that's the fight. That's what it is. The fans don't care about National League, American League anymore. They care about their team. And when they see their team playing the other really good teams more often, I think that's better for all of us.
Great points. Never thought about that. Man, Chip, thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate it, man. Have a good week.
Okay, Peter. Thanks. We'll see you soon. All the best.
All right, folks, that's Chip Carey. Special thank you to Chip. Special thanks to Brian Crock, our producer with the Lineup Media Group. And special thanks to everybody in the U.S. and around the world for joining us. Don't forget, baseballoutsidethebox.com and YouTube, Peter Caliendo. Stay healthy, stay safe. God bless you all, and we'll see you on the next show.
This has been Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Listen online at baseballoutsidethebox.com and subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and all major podcast outlets. Join the conversation on Facebook and Twitter. Get all of our podcasts now at lineupmedia.fm.